So welcome. Tonight we bring to completion this 17th chapter in the Life Divine, The Progress to Knowledge, God, Man, and Nature. He was describing the deeper and greater self behind the evanescent personal construction that we typically call ourselves. The real Purusha with a capital P, when we last met, and so we open with the next section, which brings to a grand conclusion with a great peroration, his view reconciling the divine, the universe, and the individual in humanity, the all in each, the each in all in the one beyond all. So we start. It is because of the spiritual person, the divinity in the individual, that perfection or liberation, salvation as it is called in the West, has to be individual and not collective. For whatever perfection of the collectivity is to be sought after can come only by the perfection of the individuals who constitute it. It is because the individual is that to find himself is his great necessity. In his complete surrender and self-giving to the Supreme, it is he who finds his perfect self-finding in a perfect self-offering. So the title of the chapter is Progress to Knowledge, but here Sri Aurobindo connotes that this knowledge must be based upon action too. It is a complete surrender and self-giving that leads to the perfect self-finding and the perfect self-offering. So this is all engaged in a process of self-awakening and self-consecrating. And the more you give, in a sense, the more you know. You come to know through identification with that he, she, to whom you offer. In the abolition of the mental, vital, physical ego, even of the spiritual ego, it is the formless and limitless individual that has the peace and joy of its escape into its own infinity. In the experience that he is nothing and no one, or everything and everyone, or the one which is beyond all things and absolute, it is the Brahman in the individual that effectuates this stupendous merger or this marvelous joining, yoga of its eternal unit of being with its vast, all-comprehending or supreme, all-transcending unity of eternal existence. To get beyond the ego is imperative, but one cannot get beyond the self except by finding it supremely, universally, for the self is not the ego. It is one with the all and the one, and in finding it, it is the all and the one that we discover in ourself. The spiritual reality remains united with the one and the all by that delivering disappearance. So this clearly affirms that one can eschew identification with nature and find oneself in the absolute, in the transcendence, but your answer for what is the self is not complete simply by disengaging yourself from the limited ego. One has to find it, that self, in the all and the one also. And so a liberation which only evacuates you out of the universe into a safe abode above is not the full definition of the divine self. It is also this all in the universe. It is the one. It is the transcendent as well. He continues, the higher self-knowledge begins, therefore, as soon as man has got beyond his preoccupation with the relation of nature and God to his superficial being, his most apparent self. One step is to know that this life is not all, to get at the conception of his own temporal eternity, to realize, to become concretely aware of that subjective persistence which is called the immortality of the soul. So this is the soul moving through time as an immortal essence that cannot be destroyed by the destruction of the body. When he knows that there are states beyond the material and lives behind and, and lives behind and before him, at any rate, a pre-existence and a subsequent existence, he is on the way to get rid of his temporal ignorance, ignorance of time, by enlarging himself beyond the immediate moments of time into the possession of his own eternity. So that's the first step. Another step forward is to learn that his surface waking state is only a small part of his being, to begin to fathom the abyss of the inconscient and depths of the subconscient and subliminal, and scale the heights of the superconscient. So he commences the removal of his psychological self-ignorance. So the first is becoming aware of the immortality of the soul. The second, knowing the various steps of the being, which means that, in a way, you find that the universe is replicated in yourself, all the way from the inconscient through the subconscient, through matter, life, and mind, up into the ranges of the superconscient. These we don't normally know because we have this fundamental ignorance of our own psychology, the inner construction of our nature. So that is the second. The totality of the manifest self-being erases psychological self-ignorance. A third step is to find out that there is something in him other than his instrumental mind, life, and body, not only an immortal, ever-developing individual soul that supports his nature, but an eternal, immutable self and spirit, and to learn what are the categories of his spiritual being until he discovers that all in him is an expression of the spirit and distinguishes the link between his lower and his higher existence. Thus, he sets out to remove his constitutional self-ignorance. So this knowledge of the soul and the self removes, eliminates, evaporates this constitutional self-ignorance. Discovering self and spirit, he discovers God. He finds out that there is a self beyond the temporal. He comes to the vision of that self in the cosmic consciousness as the divine reality behind nature in this world of beings. His mind opens to the thought or the sense of the absolute, of whom self and the individual and the cosmos are so many faces. The cosmic, the egoistic, the original ignorance begin to lose the rigidness of their hold upon him. In his attempt to cast his existence into the mold of this enlarging self-knowledge, his whole view and motive of life, thought, and action are progressively modified and transformed. His practical ignorance of himself, his nature and his object of existence diminishes. He has set his step on the path which leads out of the falsehood and suffering of a limited and partial into the perfect possession and enjoyment of a true and complete existence. Pardon me. So this discovery of the self beyond the ranges of time, a great step, a liberating step. But then to discover that same self in the cosmic consciousness as the reality behind the world and all the beings within it, all the other selves that we meet. When we come to know this, the other walls of these ignorances, remember he talked about a sevenfold ignorance, they all begin to collapse. And it is this applied wisdom in action within life that leads to a fulfilling and joyful possession of both self and world, interaction and emergence in the world. It is a knowledge then that can act, that begins to seize upon the nascent power that indwells knowledge. In the course of this progress, he writes, he discovers step by step the unity of the three categories with which he started. For first, he finds that in his manifest being, he is one with the cosmos and nature. Mind, life, and body, the soul in the succession of time, the conscient, subconscient, and superconscient, these in their various relations and the result of their relations are cosmos and nature. But he finds too that in all which stands behind them or on which they are based, he is one with God. For the absolute, the spirit, the self, spaceless and timeless, the self manifest in the cosmos and Lord of nature. All this is what we mean by God, and in all this his own being goes back to God and derives from it. He is the absolute, the self, the spirit, self-projected in a multiplicity of itself into cosmos and veiled in nature. In both of these realizations, he finds his unity with all other souls and beings, relatively in nature, since he is one with them in mind, vitality, matter, soul, every cosmic principle and result, however various in energy and active energy, disposition of principle and disposition of result, but absolutely in God, because the one absolute, the one self, the one spirit is ever the self of all and the origin, possessor, and enjoyer of their multitudinous diversities. So the three categories. First, we're one with the cosmos. Second, we're one with God, and we're one with God in all. And the third, we're one with all other souls in unity with God and in unity with the universe. Above, beyond, but also within nature. In nature, we're in relation to the Godhead as distributed manifoldly around in other beings and other souls. In God, identified absolutely. The unity of God in nature cannot fail to manifest itself to him, for he finds in the end that it is the Absolute who is all these relativities. He sees that it is the Spirit of whom every other principle is a manifestation. He discovers that it is the Self who has become all these becomings. Isha Upanishad, verse 6. He feels that it is the Shakti or power of being and consciousness of the Lord of all beings, which is nature and is acting in the cosmos. Chit Shakti, distributing the reality of Sat throughout nature. Thus, in the progress of our self-knowledge, we arrive at that by the discovery of which all is known as one with ourself, and by the possession of which all is possessed and enjoyed in our own self-existence. This is both Mundaka Upanishad 113 and Ishu Upanishad. Equally, by virtue of this unity, the knowledge of the universe must lead the mind of man to the same large revelation, for he cannot know nature as matter and force and life without being driven to scrutinize the relation of mental consciousness with these principles. And once he knows the real nature of mind, he must go inevitably beyond every surface appearance. He must discover the will and intelligence secret in the works of force, operative in material and vital phenomena. He must perceive it as one in the waking consciousness, the subconscient, and the superconscient. He must find the soul in the body of the material universe. Pursuing nature through these categories in which he recognizes his unity with the rest of the cosmos, he finds a supernature, para-prakriti, as the Gita would call it, behind all that is apparent, a supreme power of the Spirit in time and beyond time, in space and beyond space, a conscious power of the Self, who by her becomes all becomings, of the Absolute, who by her manifests all relativities, Shakti. He knows her, in other words, not only as material energy, life force, mind energy, the many faces of nature, but as the power of knowledge will of the divine Lord of being, the consciousness force of the self-existent, eternal, and infinite. So, what we identify as Shakti is that Chit Shakti, so essential that it is one with all existence that is real. And it is the interplay of being with its consciousness force which produces delight, which is the same thing in play as consciousness, the same thing in status of being as being. It is Satchit Ananda spread forth before us. So, in other words, our knowledge, and remember this is a chapter about progress to knowledge, is incomplete unless we come to know that Satchit Ananda as a distribution of by knowledge will of its own substance of being in every grade of manifestation before us. If it's inconscient, subconscient, conscient, or superconscient, it's all that same being. We cannot convict any of it of unworthiness. We must embrace and know that divinity in all, or our knowledge is incomplete and our work is only partially fulfilled. The quest of man for God, which becomes in the end the most ardent and enthralling of all his quests, begins with his first vague questionings of nature and a sense of something unseen both in himself and her. Even if, as modern science insists, religion started from animism, spirit worship, demon worship, and the deification of natural forces, these first forms only embodying primitive figures, a veiled intuition in the subconscious, an obscure and ignorant feeling of hidden influences and incalculable forces, or a vague sense of being, will, intelligence, and what seems to us inconscient, of the invisible behind the visible, of the secretly conscious spirit in things, distributing itself in every working of energy. So, if the first innings of religion seem crude, we have the sense, a deep intuition, that there is something stirring within, and perhaps our immature reflections don't tell the whole or even a fitting story about that, with a capital T, but we're getting to it. The obscurity and primitive inadequacy of the first perceptions do not detract from the value or the truth of this great quest of the human heart and mind, since all our seekings, including science itself, must start from an obscure and ignorant perception of hidden realities and proceed to the more and more luminous vision of the truth, which at first comes to us masked, draped, veiled by the mists of the ignorance. Anthropomorphism is an imaged recognition of the truth that man is what he is because God is what he is, and that there is one soul and body of things, humanity, even in its incompleteness, the most complete manifestation yet achieved here, and divinity, the perfection of what in man is imperfect. So we're a way station on the way to completion, even in the current version, this year's model of humanity. That he sees himself everywhere and worships that as God is also true. But here, too, he has laid confusedly the groping hand of ignorance on a truth, that his being and the being are one, that this is a partial reflection of that, and that to find his greater self everywhere is to find God and to come near to the reality in things, the reality of all existence. So our worst limitations nevertheless conceal something more true within us. And our deeper aspiration takes us to the goal of a greater truth, in which those drapings drop. A unity behind diversity and discord is the secret of the variety of human religions and philosophies, for they all get at some image or some side clue, touch some portion of the one truth, or envisage some one of its myriad aspects. Whether they see dimly the material world as the body of the divine, or life as a great pulsation of the breath of divine existence, or all things as thoughts of the cosmic mind, or realize that there is a spirit which is greater than these things, their subtler and yet more wonderful source and creator, whether they find God only in the inconscient, or as the one conscious in inconscient things, or as an ineffable superconscious existence to reach whom we must leave behind our terrestrial being and annul the mind, life, and body, or, overcoming division, see that he is all these at once, and accept fearlessly the large consequences of that vision, whether they worship him with universality as the cosmic being, or limit him and themselves, like the positivist, in humanity only, or, on the contrary, carried away by the vision of the timeless and spaceless immutable, reject him in nature and cosmos, Whether they adore him in various strange or beautiful or magnified forms of the human ego or for his perfect possession of the qualities to which man aspires, his divinity revealed to them as a supreme power, love, beauty, truth, righteousness, wisdom, whether they perceive him as the Lord of nature, Father and Creator, or as nature herself and the universal mother, pursue him as the lover and attractor of souls, or serve him as the hidden master of all works, bow down before the one God or the manifold deity, the one divine man or the one divine in all men, or more largely, discover the one whose presence enables us to become unified in consciousness or in works or in life with all beings, unified with all things in time and space, unified with nature and her influences and even her inanimate forces. The truth behind must ever be the same, because all is the one divine infinite whom all are seeking. Because everything is that one, there must be this endless variety in the human approach to its possession. It was necessary that man should find God thus variously in order that he might come to know him entirely. But it is when knowledge reaches its highest aspects that it is possible to arrive at its greatest unity. The highest and widest seeing is the wisest. For then all knowledge is unified in its one comprehensive meaning. All religions are seen as approaches to a single truth, all philosophies as divergent viewpoints looking at different sides of a single reality, all sciences meet together in a supreme science. For that which all our mind knowledge and sense knowledge and supersensuous vision is seeking is found most integrally in the unity of God and man and nature and all that is in nature. So we see here the reflection in this peroration of what was a constantly building realization in him that began with the realization of Nirvana in 1908, catapulted into the realization of the cosmic consciousness and the one being who dwells everywhere, as he sat in the Alipur jail, and as later he discussed in his speech at Uttarpara. This is something which he writes about also in this chapter in the Arya, and then phrases a little differently there, only to improve upon and expand here. There he confined himself to saying, all religions are seen in their one meaning. And then went on to say, the Hindu who bows down in adoration before the Ashwata tree, if he has any grasp of the principles of his religion, or has learned to live in the ancient wisdom, knows what his act signifies, that the absolute, the divine, is there quite as much as in the immense procession of the universes. In other words, finding the absolute moving through time in nature as this cosmic tree, the Ashwata tree, is as valid as finding the absolute in a timeless beyond. Interesting, he erased this section and then improved upon it, and then added, in something of an expansion, this last paragraph which we read now. The Brahman, the Absolute, is the Spirit, the timeless self, the self possessing time, lord of nature, creator and continent of the cosmos, and immanent in all existences, the soul from whom all souls derive and to whom they are drawn. That is the truth of being as man's highest God conception sees it. The same absolute revealed in all relativities, the spirit who embodies himself in cosmic mind and life and matter, and of whom nature is the self of energy, so that all she seems to create is the self and spirit variously manifested in his own being to his own conscious force for the delight of his various existence. This is the truth of being to which man's knowledge of nature and cosmos is leading him, and which he will reach when his nature knowledge unites itself with his God knowledge. This truth of the absolute is the justification of the cycles of the world. It is not their denial. It is the self-being that has become all these becomings. The self is the eternal unity of all these existences. I am He. Cosmic energy is not other than the conscious force of that self-existent. By that energy, it takes through universal nature innumerable forms of itself. Through its divine nature, it can, embracing the universal but transcendent of it, arrive in them at the individual possession of its complete existence, when its presence and power are felt in one, in all, and in the relations of one with all. This is the truth of being to which man's entire knowledge of himself in God and in nature rises and widens. A triune knowledge, the complete knowledge of God, the complete knowledge of himself, the complete knowledge of nature, gives him his high goal. It assigns a vast and full sense to the labor and effort of humanity. The conscious unity of the three, God, soul, and nature in his own consciousness, is the sure foundation of his perfection and his realization of all harmonies. This will be his highest and widest state, his status of a divine consciousness and a divine life, and its initiation, the starting point for his entire evolution of his self-knowledge, world knowledge, God knowledge. So he ranges here from the self-evident truths of Satchit Ananda back through the Isha Upanishad, verse 7. Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmaiva bhud vijanataha. He in whom it is the self-being that has become all existences that are becomings, and ends in ekatva, in oneness, oneness of God, oneness of nature, oneness of our own soul. The three cannot be divided, and until they are fully unified and made manifest, we have not completed our cosmic work. So this is a closing chapter from the Arya, which began in its first iteration in April 1917, and we began our study of it in April 2017. So we have done, and we'll next move to chapter 18, the evolutionary process, ascent and integration, I think is the chapter title. That's for next week. Let's see if we have found a passage which is apposite our study in Savitri. So, we look in Book 3, the Book of the Divine Mother, Canto 4, The Vision and the Boon. In an ill-fitting and voluminous robe, a radiant purpose still conceals its face. A mighty blindness stumbles hoping on, feeding its strength on gifts of luminous chance. Because the human instrument has failed, the Godhead frustrate sleeps within its seed, a spirit entangled in the forms it made. His failure is not failure whom God leads. Through all, the slow, mysterious march goes on. An immutable power has made this mutable world. A self-fulfilling transcendence treads man's road. The driver of the soul upon its path, it knows its steps, its way is inevitable. And how shall the end be vain when God is guide? However man's mind may tire or fail his flesh, a will prevails, canceling his conscious choice. The goal recedes, a bornless vastness calls, retreating into an immense unknown. There is no end to the world's stupendous march. There is no rest for the embodied soul. It must live on, describe all time's huge curve. An influx presses from the closed beyond, forbidding to him rest and earthly ease. Till he has found himself, he cannot pause. A light there is that leads, a power that aids. Unmarked, unfelt, it sees in him and acts. Ignorant, he forms the all-conscient in his depths, human, looks up to superhuman peaks. A borrower of supernature's gold, he paves his road to immortality. Namaste, Jai Ma.